to limit outbreaks. To find out more, visit quebec.ca/test-covid-19. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, Joachage, Munuyang, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, December 9th, 2021. On tonight's show, two shows that you can see online and one in person, powered entirely by that one person on stage. My guest this evening, Sophie El-Assad, makes her directorial debut in Modern Myth, Antioch.
The story itself reflects a little bit how we're approaching the play in itself, is allowing us to break our barriers down and now allowing us to acknowledge that, yes, there are some flaws, but what are we going to do with those flaws and how are we going to move forward to have those important dialogues.
Norman Navratsky delves into family lore to document a Canadian travesty in Run, Navratsky, Run, Escape from Banff Prison.
Curious enough, I received a postcard in the early 1990s, which I still have, which said, you know, we are sending you this postcard because somebody from your family was possibly interned in one of the prison camps in Canada, and we want you to know about this. And I'm like, what?
And Mikhail Bielinski powers her new solo show, Warm Up, on a bike in a statement about the environment.
At some point after the shift, I really embodied the meditative state. And it's a way of healing in a way. It's like, I think we really need healing, like Mother Earth need healing, but also us.
And before we begin, a look at some of the theater you can check out this weekend. Infinite Theater has announced its Write on Cue Playwriting Competition winner. It is Fix by Joy Ross Jones, written as a response to the present political crisis in Venezuela, where Joy has roots. The runner-up is Arco by Nick Carpenter, inspired by a real-life event where a classical concert is underway in a city under siege. These plays and more will be presented this weekend with staged readings at Kin Experience, 397A St. Catherine Street West. I visited the venue for the first time last weekend. It's really nice. It's very personal and cozy. Tickets are free and available on eventbrite.ca, or you can visit infinitheater.com. This is Infinite Theater's Write on Cue Playwriting Competition. Also this weekend, Superdogs continues at the Siegel Center. There are two more showings of The Love Trial by Kiki Dranius at the Old Masonic Temple on Sherbrooke Street West. And there are two ongoing student shows at the National Theatre School. Chelsea Dabb directs Martha Burns in Und by Howard Baker at the André Paget Studio on the Saint-Denis campus. And the graduating class of 2022 performs in Venus by Suzanne Laurie Parks, directed by Mike Payette. That's taking place at the Ludger Duvernay Theatre in Monument, at the Monument National. Both shows are on until Saturday. You can visit ent-nts.ca. And it's also the final weekend to see Jonathan, A Siegel Parable, presentation by Geordie Theater and Surreal So Real Theater. That is happening at Hall Fred Barry at the Denise Peltier Theater towards the east. So that's going on until Saturday. It's great for families and teenagers and adults of any age as well. You have heard the voice of Sophie El-Assad here on Upstage a few times over the past months. She's an acclaimed costume designer in Montreal and is also branching into other disciplines, including preparing for her directorial debut next week, an inventive reading of Antioch by Quebec writer Sarah Bertillon. We uncover a myth through the lens of magical realism, meeting Inaz, a mother who immigrated to the West and is now clashing with her teenage daughter Lily, who has grown up in a very different culture from her mother's. But Lily can lean on her friend, Antigone, Yes, the figure from Greek myth, daughter of Oedipus and Jocasta, who defies the decree to leave her brother's body unburied on the battlefield, the subject herself of an eponymous play by Sophocles. Antioch is a Talisman Theater production. They specialize in English language premieres of Quebec plays, and this is the company's first, quote, produced for digital experience. Talisman has teamed up with Buzzy Outfit Potato Cakes Digital for the visual direction and editing of the work. You will be able to stream the show on YouTube at a set time all next week. And as you're about to hear, the director Sophie was challenged not only with her first work as a director, helming a digital-only show, but in also navigating some of the thornier questions she had about how the original writer, Sarah Bertillon, a Quebecer by birth, crafted a story about the immigrant experience. I spoke with Sophie Elassad earlier this week.
Welcome to Upstage, Sophie. Thank you for taking the time. So congratulations. This is your directorial debut. How does that feel?
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me. It's been a project where I feel like I have a lot more. It's been a humbling learning experience. I'll say that. Yes. Very exciting on many levels. Very different to what I'm used to doing.
And what you're used to doing is costume design, but I've noticed that you're directing, but you're still working on the costume design side of things. Did that just make sense to you to take care of that as well?
When thinking about this project, it's not an actual production. It's an enhanced reading. So there were elements where we had to decide where are we going to put our focus on. And I had a very clear vision in my head of how I saw the characters, and it just, for the sake of time as well, it just felt more natural to just like, okay, let's just have them in these outfits. But I had a wonderful assistant, head of wardrobe, Sandrina Esparagna, who's an amazing costume designer herself, helped me out. So
let's get into the story. It's an adaptation of an existing play, but it also draws from Greek myth. At the heart of it is a mother-daughter story. Lily and Inas, is that how I pronounce the mother's name?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes.
So tell me about them and the tension or the questions in the relationship.
This is a story about, as you mentioned, a mother, Inas, who's an immigrant to the West, and her daughter, Lily, who was born and raised in the West, and they become estranged just because of the different life paths they've taken and experienced. And Inas sort of spends her time trying to numb herself from the pain that her past life has brought her. Whereas Lily, she's at this period in her life where she's in between teenagehood and adulthood, and she's at this point where the system is inviting her in and she's resisting that. And there's a sense that she's actually seeking what her mom is trying to avoid, which is emotion and meaning and passion, that she feels like her life is numbing. So they're both seeking very different things and come from very different places. And the character of Antigone, I think, is an important anchor in this piece, in that she exists in both characters in very different ways and showcases the strength in both characters. And I think wants to make it very clear to the audience that neither Inas or Lily are right or wrong, and it's just important to hear both perspectives. So at the end of the play, Inas and Lily are sort of come face to face in what is this sort of time warp of space and time at the border of Syria, in Antioch, which is a place in Turkey. And it's only at this point in time where all the tension is brought up so high that they're able to sort of have a face-to-face conversation with each other and break down those walls, and connect and see eye to eye and understand each other. It's a very beautiful story about connection and disconnection and the importance of sharing who you are with the people you love. So that's it in a nutshell, I guess.
Lily is a modern teenage girl. She's in her contemporary world, but yet she has a best friend who is a girl from antiquity, from ancient Greece, from myth. Tell me about her relationship with Antigone.
Yeah, it's a really interesting inclusion, and it means so much in this particular piece. First of all, it's so cool to have three really complex, powerful women on stage. And I think Antigone is there, I think, to reflect the power in each of these women in very different ways. Antigone, as a lot of you might know, is this young woman from teenage mythology who stands her ground and goes against the system. She's like the archetype of, in many ways, girl power and the power of youth. And I think that she's very important in this particular piece, especially in our adaptation and how I wanted to interpret the characters, because there's reference in the text to an adaptation of Antigone by Jean Anouilh, where the vulnerability of the characters is really, really showcased. I think the message here by Sarah is underlining the fact that vulnerability in itself is very, very powerful. And there's something about being able to acknowledge your flaws with one another that allows communities to sort of to break down barriers and be able to move forward and have important dialogue. So it's actually quite interesting because the story itself reflects a little bit how we're approaching the play in itself, is allowing us to break our barriers down and now allowing us to acknowledge that, yes, there are some flaws, but what are we going to do with those flaws and how are we going to move forward to have those important dialogues?
I'm speaking with Sophie El-Assad, director of Antioch, coming to a computer near you. It is a live streaming event or an online event, and we'll get more into that in just a moment. So tell me about, I guess, where the play by Sarah Bertium kind of stops and starts, perhaps, like why you chose to look at this particular play and the adaptations you felt you had to make for your audience.
When I first came into contact with this play, it wasn't from the perspective of a director. I was approached to work on it from a more dramaturgical perspective, looking at it with a Middle Eastern eye. I was raised in the Middle East, and my family is Lebanese. And so I think that's why I was approached. And, you know, emotionally and technically, this play is gorgeous. It has so many levels to it. It has so much rhythm. It's musical, it's poetic, it's visually so stimulating, visceral, at least for someone like me who has a design background. If you think about it contextually, it was Sarah wrote it as a commission to tackle the topic of radicalization in 2016. And so there are questions as to why is it relevant today to put on a piece that is speaking about a topic that doesn't necessarily bring forward conversations that are relevant anymore when it comes to reminding people of war and this topic that is constantly brought up surrounding the Middle East and their communities and the violence. So there is a question of, should we be putting on a play like this today? What does that mean? But in the play itself, there's also some instances where there's certain things that feel a lot like generalizations and certain areas that kind of felt like, oh, this might not make sense historically speaking and geographically speaking. And it felt like there are some moments where we were moving into like misinformation and an unfair representation, I think, of those communities. So for me, as someone who is from that part of the world, it was a very sensitive piece in that sense. And when I was asked if I wanted to pursue it as a director, it was a big decision for me. I was like, this play is great, and it's a wonderful opportunity for me to work on my skills as an aspiring director. But I was very weary of it because it didn't necessarily follow the values of representation that I have. So it was important for me to be able to adapt this and sort of edit the text and see where things could be modified to better reflect the characters and honor them and their truths and histories. And And I took it upon myself to do a lot of research. So going into this, I was able to talk to a lot of members of the community who were like academics, who were other artists from the Middle East, from Syria. And they were all very, very interesting and offered a lot of guidance and opinions. And at the end of the day, I decided that I learned a lot from this research, and I learned a lot from speaking to these people. And I felt like there was value in bringing forward a play like this, just in terms of being able to acknowledge that this is a contemporary issue, in that misrepresentation is very much alive and out there. And instead of, you know, this play is not unknown. It's a play by a very well-known, established Quebecois writer. She's great at what she does. And it's produced, and it's a play that has come up a few times for me this year as a potential production piece. And so it's very clear that the issues that are inside of it are not necessarily that obvious to some people. And I think that's a problem. So for me, it was very important to bring that forward in a way that opens a dialogue within the community. And I saw it as an opportunity to hire Middle Eastern artists and sort of reclaim, in a way, an identity that was taken from us in the original text. But I think it's very important to acknowledge as well that the writer, Sarah, you know, I spoke to her and we had an amazing conversation, and she's so gracious and so humble and so aware of these problems. And we both agreed that this is the beauty of theater, is the ability to have these like wonderful and fruitful conversations about how things are changing, about representation, and to bring them forward and adapt the artwork to the community.
It's like having a dialogue with the creative work. It's not like a book that is on the shelf and it stays there, or a movie that has been produced and you see it and that's it. But something that has to be, when we do plays, especially older ones, and we might want to adapt them to what we're looking at today, it's a constant conversation between updating, refreshing, reconnecting, examining it.
Exactly. It's a very malleable piece in itself, and it breathes, and its meaning can change. There was something so exciting about like seeing this as a way of researching and challenging, to see how we can add nuance to the character through like specific cultural research. It was a great, great lesson.
Speaking with Sophie Ellisad, the director of Antioch Coming to a Computer Near You via Talisman Theater. So yeah, it is going to be an online show. It'll be on a YouTube, I think, streaming. I think you buy your ticket and then you can watch it online. Is that right? Mm-hmm. And is that live every performance or?
No. So I guess I'll speak a little bit about this piece and the mediums that we're using to explore it. So this is an enhanced reading. And what that means is that we went through the process of filming performances, and it's going to be edited and sort of put together in a way that's like film. It brings together what feels like video art, film, and theater. So there's still that sense of theatricality, but it's not going to be live. This project, I think, it started off before I became a part of it, actually. And the purpose of it was to basically experiment ways in which theater in the world of a pandemic can still allow for that level of intimacy that we all love in live performance. And so there was a question brought about by Talisman to see how we can better produce online theater. And the technologies that we're using in this particular piece include binaural technology. So what that means is being able to, if you have headphones, hear the sound in a way that feels very 360, as though you're in this space, but also through very beautiful images, I guess, as well. So the artists that are in charge of the visuals, Potato Cake Digital, have created this beautiful world that really allow us to, I think, to forget that you're maybe watching a theater piece online. So there's this beautiful array of stimuli that I think will really help bring us into the world of the characters.
So does it feel weird to be working purely online and, you know, not be getting ready for a live performance?
Yeah, it definitely feels very weird. It's the opposite of what I'm used to in many ways. And I think everybody involved, it's very experimental in that it's the first time any of us have done something like this before. So it's very exciting, but it has definitely come with a lot of, we might do this differently next time. So usually in theater, there's this process where you like, together with the actors and the designers, you have this period of exploration and you kind of discover things as you go. There's a little bit of planning, but it happens very gradually. Whereas here, I guess more in the vein of film world, everything had to be planned beforehand. And there was very, very little time because it was a reading, there was very little time for exploration in the room. And sometimes, you know, we only got like one or two tries per scene and then one take per shot. So it's very rock and roll. And there's a level of tangibility that I feel you have with live theater that as a director, I don't feel like I have as much tangibility in this production, which in a way it's very interesting because it forces me to like let go. And it's an experience of trust as well. Like I have to trust, and I do very much so trust my team. It feels very collaborative and less hierarchical as perhaps traditional theater might be.
And you're looking forward to directing your next piece, I assume. You're already probably thinking about the next project, perhaps?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yes, it might be a little less intense than this one was. I mean, I definitely have learned so much from this production. And so I feel like maybe the next production will feel like a breeze. So yes.
Well, Sophie, congratulations on your directorial debut. And thank you for telling us all about Antioch. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That was Sophie El Assad, who is gearing up for her directorial debut in Antioch after years of acclaim as a costume designer in Montreal. Antioch will be presented in English with French subtitles and available online on YouTube starting this Monday, December 13th. Showings at 7 p.m. until December 18th, and then a 3 p.m. matinee on December 19th. Pay what you can, tickets, and more information at talisman-theater.com. I'm Sarah De A, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come on the show, Mikal is a Montreal singer and actor, and she has a new show about climate change, consumption, and rest. And she is going to prove her point by powering all the components of the show, including the lights, by pedaling on a bicycle on stage. That's coming up. But now we'll meet Norman Navratsky. One day, Norman received a note in the mail. The sender suggested that one or more of his ancestors had been held in a federal concentration camp in Alberta near Banff. The truth so intrigued this playwright, actor, and musician that he ended up writing, performing, and shooting a play about this dark chapter of Canadian history. It's called Run, Navratsky, Run, Escape from Banff Prison. And it looks at the forced imprisonment of over 8,500 men, women, and children by the Canadian government over 1914 to 1920 during World War I. Most were recent immigrants from the Ukrainian region, and some were born here or were naturalized British subjects. Conditions at the 24 camps across the country were brutal, with many people forced to do labor, building roads, clearing brush, building experimental farms in near wilderness, and 107 of them died in captivity, 6 shot dead while trying to escape, all because they were seen as lesser by other Canadians and were considered to be members of an enemy force. Norman tells this story through the experience of a poor, unemployed Ukrainian Canadian who is captured in Alberta. He yearns to escape and turns to his grandmother's Ukrainian folk magic for help. This is the third chapter in Norman's trilogy of Ukrainian-Polish-Canadian plays, and starting Saturday, it will be available on YouTube until 9 p.m. on Friday, December 17th. The film is shot in Banff, Vancouver, Rawdon, Quebec, and inside the Gaston Miron building in Montreal. I spoke with Norman Navrotsky last week. Welcome, Norman, to Upstage. Thank you so much for being here. How are you today?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much, Sarah, for having me.
So can we start with some of your family history? Because some of what you're exploring in this play is personal.
Very personal. It's based on a true story. I had family who emigrated to Canada a long, long time ago, dispersed all across the country. Some of them, or many, I didn't know these people. These are great grandparents and great uncles and aunts and whoever. And some of them ended up in prison. And some of them ended up in prison because they were poor, unemployed, and Ukrainian, and were rounded up during the First World War, thrown into internment camps, and their stories were never told.
Now, is this similar to what we've heard about when it comes to Japanese Canadians who were sent away? Recently, there was an apology from the Prime Minister for Italian Canadians interned just here in Montreal. They were considered enemies.
Of course. That was the second wave of cross-Canada internments during the Second World War. During the First World War, the Canadian government, for some stupid reason, but we know why, targeted Ukrainian Canadians because they mistakenly assumed that just because they had Austro-Hungarian citizenship meant they were part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, which Canada and Great Britain were at war with. But they were actually Ukrainians because the Austro-Hungarian Empire had invaded, occupied, and enslaved them in Ukraine. And that's why they came to Canada, to get away from them. So,
yeah, there was a great wave of migration from Ukraine at that point. Do you know how many would have been settled across mostly the prairies, right?
Mostly the prairies. There were thousands and thousands and thousands. And they rounded up 9,000 of them, put them in jail. Another 80,000 were forced to report to the RCMP every week. And these camps were built coast to coast, 24 camps, including in Quebec, in northern Quebec, in Spirit Lake.
Wow. Okay, so we've got a lot of history to dig into there. This was obviously very compelling. Why would you choose to do a piece of art based on this story?
Because somebody wrote to me and said, I saw your last play. I think for your next play, you should investigate this. I'm like, investigate what? We found your family name on this list of prisoners. I'm like, what? You know? And then I started doing the research. And the more research I did, the more involved I got. Just so happens, I'm doing research for a novel based on family history. And this fit in exactly. It's like, oh, my God. So that was the inspiration to do the piece. To tell the story that is little known, you know, much like residential school survivors. It's one of those stories that was buried. You know, the government hoped people would forget about it. They would go away. But the story is there. The survivors were there up until a while ago. And, you know, but the government destroyed all the documentation about it. So I had to do a lot of research.
You're very prolific. You've created just a massive content over your career. And I'm wondering why history is of interest to you, because you've also done a play about the Winnipeg General Strike, which is just past our centenary. I think that was what you did for the occasion of, yes. So what intrigues you about investigating the past?
Stories that we can learn from, stories that are universal, stories that people today can relate to, stories that have meaning for today, and stories that are important to know about so we don't forget, oh yeah, we did that once upon a time. Let's not repeat that again, please, okay?
And this also dovetailed with a novel that you're still working on right now, looking into the same time period, same story.
Yes. And it's also like part of my trilogy. This is like the third in this series of very personal family plays, because the original one was about the guy who was murdered in Montreal, Nick Zinchuk. And that was Eviction, Dog's Blood. And that was about a Ukrainian Polish Canadian murdered in Montreal because he was resisting an eviction. Hello. Today, people are resisting evictions. Thankfully, nobody's being murdered, but the same kind of scenario. Then the second play was about early immigration to Canada by Ukrainian Canadians, including my family, who were stricken with fever, scarlet fever, and died and were buried in the middle of nowhere and ignored by the government and subjected to all kinds of racist treatment by local people in Manitoba. Horrible story, mostly buried, and I had to uncover that one too.
I'm speaking with artist Norman Navratsky, who is presenting his new play, Run, Navratsky, Run, Escape from Banff Prison. So when this person reached out to you and said, we found, you know, your family name tied to the story of this forced internment and these people who had to check in, was that a surprise to you, or had you already known that maybe this was in the past?
Curious enough, I received a postcard in the early 1990s, which I still have, which said, you know, we are sending you this postcard because somebody from your family was possibly interned in one of the prison camps in Canada, and we want you to know about this. And I'm like, what? What's this all about? And I put that postcard away and thought nothing of it. Well, lo and behold, how many years later, 30 years later, I get an email from somebody saying, your family name's on this list. I whip out the postcard and yeah, it matches. Okay, I better do the research. Bizarre.
Oh my gosh, that must have been so intriguing.
Completely.
Okay, so when we go about when you're constructing the hero at the center of this story, what elements do you choose to take from history and keep, and what are you embellishing or inventing? Tell us about the story.
Yeah, the story is about a poor Ukrainian, unemployed Canadian citizen who comes to Canada, like all the other Ukrainians, like so many other immigrants, hoping for a better life, finds out, it's not true what they said it would be, works really, really hard, ends up in the Depression in 1913, gets laid off, First World War comes along, all of a sudden he finds himself in jail, and it's like, hello, why, what am I doing here? I didn't do anything wrong, didn't commit a crime, nothing. And the story is about what happens to him in prison, outside Banff in the Castle Mountain prison, and what goes through his head, you know, what is he thinking, what is he feeling, and what does he survive with, what helps him survive this experience, what does he draw on in terms of family memory, in terms of family love, you know. And it's his grandmother, his Baba, we call it in Ukrainian, who comes to help him in his dreams, and she works all this peasant magic because she's a special healer back in Ukraine. She does all kinds of magical, not witchcraft, but folkloric medicinal ritual stuff that actually works. And my Baba here in Canada, you know, did stuff like that. It's like, whoa, okay. So I wanted to incorporate that in the play, but I also wanted to get into the guy's head. What would go through your mind when you're being forced to do slave labor in a camp, being beaten and sometimes tortured for no reason other than you're Ukrainian, you're unemployed and you're poor, and they wanted you off the street so you wouldn't cause any trouble. And so what to keep, what to throw away, to keep parts of his culture that were important, that helped him survive this, to keep that spirit of rebellion that smolders in everybody, to keep that alive and to present that. It was, you know, it's challenging. What do you keep? What do you not? Because I want to keep the story short. You know, it's like a 40-minute play as is. I could write a novel about it, though. There's so much information that came out during the research. But what makes it interesting, intriguing, you know, engaging for an audience, how to keep it like that. So that determined the elements that I kept as opposed to those I threw away. You don't have much time, and I want the play to move along.
Yeah, indeed. It's only 40 minutes. Is that a function of the fact that it is online? It's a play that we can watch on YouTube? Or do you just like prefer brevity when possible?
I prefer brevity. I've done longer pieces, that's for sure. But I wanted, given that we're living in the age of the pandemic, the lockdown, I didn't know when I started writing it if I'd be able to present it live. And that was the intention, was to do a live performance. But given all the, you know, the uncertainties of this period of the pandemic, I thought, just to play it safe, let's do it online and let's put it on YouTube and let's give people a whole week to watch it, to choose from.
I'm speaking with Norman Navratsky, who is presenting his new play, Run, Navratsky, Run, Escape from Banff Prison. Now, it's a family affair. It is about your family history, but also your sister is a part of it. And this is filmed in different places across Canada as well. So tell me about how you collaborate often with your sister, but tell us about how you enfolded her into the production.
My sister and I are very, very close. We started collaborating together in the last 2 years, especially during the pandemic, on musical projects, brought us together in a duo, the Mavratsky. So we play traditional East European, Polish, Ukrainian music. And as I was writing the play, I'm like, you know, my sister's such a great actor and she's so full of talent and she's the best sister in the world anyway. How can she contribute to this project? And then it struck me, she will be the grandmother character. And so I was actually lucky enough to be able to fly to Vancouver, film her in Vancouver for her portion of the show. And she appears in the show on the screen, on the big screen. But also I had to film, I couldn't go to Banff, didn't want to go to Banff because of, you know, the travel restrictions and also, you know, the extent of COVID cases. So how do I replicate the Banff setting? And the closest thing I came to was Rawdon. That's how I could make, because it's so beautiful. I don't know if you've ever been there.
It's just really, north of Montreal. It's a beautiful area.
Beautiful trees, falls, rivers. And this approximates Banff. So use that. And then the rest was filmed indoors here in a beautiful setting where we actually performed the piece.
So there's so much in the story, like someone who's unjustly imprisoned, you know, the treatment of this stranger alienation. There's a lot going on. I'm wondering what for you, you know, besides the family, this is exploring your family history, which is a really interesting thing for a lot of people. What are the themes that really like stood out to you and really resonated with you as you were developing this?
How do people get out of intolerable situations? What drives people to act as opposed to just mope and think and fret and, you know, worry about these things? What motivates people to act? For example, we're in the climate crisis right now. People talk about it. People think about it. People get all freaked out about it. Well, let's do something, you know? So what is it that drives people to actually do something about the situation they find untenable, unacceptable for whatever reasons? So the play talks about that. What is it inside people that motivates them to act, to get out of situations that are, you know, unacceptable for so many different reasons? What is it that gives people hope? You know, what is it that gives them the hope to do that particular action, to get out of that situation, to take action? And what is the kind of solidarity that is required to help that happen as well? Because you can't do these things alone. You need to work with others. So how do we do that? So all these processes, you know, the thinking, the feeling, the responding, the actual cooperation, that comes into the play. That's what makes it a universal story. People struggling to be free, you know, people daring to take the risks, to do whatever has to be done to get free, to become free. Whether you're in a toxic relationship, a bad working, you know, job, you know, situation, whatever it might be, what do you need to get out of that? And I think the play is inspirational on that level for people.
It's an irresistible struggle for all of us. As you were saying, it can apply to so many different situations. Now, this is pretty remarkable, but you wrote, you directed, you're performing in it. You also composed and performed the music with your sister, Vivian. So what was the biggest challenge about mounting a production like this? And then, of course, you know, doing the research and then eventually cutting it down to a 40-minute production.
Self-directing and working with no money. I had no money. I applied for all kinds of grants and got absolutely nothing. And that was really like a disappointing part of the project. But what it meant was I couldn't hire extra people. So when you self-direct a piece like this, that's a big challenge. That's the biggest challenge is self-directing and, you know, watching what works, what doesn't work and having an outside eye. But I just didn't have the budget, you know, So the budget was a big challenge as well, like doing everything. I'm used to doing things by myself, but it's nice to have some financial support to be able to do it with. So without that, you're kind of slightly restricted and there's more pressure. So to be under pressure to do this, but nonetheless, I'm happy. We did it. We did it. We got it. And people can watch it. And I'm really proud of it. I'm really proud because I think I've raised the bar in terms of the production value compared to my more recent work that I had to do in the apartment. To go outside the apartment for is just a wonderful, liberating thing. To be able to do theater on a stage with a space, that's a liberating thing, as you know.
Thank you so much, Norman. It's just mind-blowing to hear about your work on this. Congratulations.
Thank you very, very much.
That was Norman Navrotsky, the creator of Run, Navrotsky, Run, Escape from Banff Prison. He is a playwright, actor, and musician, and directed the filmed play, and also performed some of the music with his sister, Vivian. You can access the show on Norman's YouTube channel. His account is his full name, Norman, N-O-R-M-A-N, Navrotsky, N-A-W-R-O-C-K-I. It starts broadcasting Saturday at 9 a.m. until Friday, December 17th at 9 p.m. Eastern. And you're hearing some of the music from the trailer now. I'm Sarah Day. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Mikhail Bielinski is originally from Quebec City, but has made Montreal her home now for 3 years. She is a multidisciplinary performer who composes songs, poems, and music, sometimes with a liturgical bent, and of course she also performs. But Mikhail is also, of course, a theater kid, having graduated in acting from the École supérieure de théâtre at UQAM, and her newest endeavor brings her to the stage. It's called Warm Up, and it's a commentary about the environment, overconsumption, and rest. Here, Mikhail is ingeniously pedaling her way through the show. She finagled a way to link a bicycle to the mechanics of the stage, so she will be literally powering her own show, the lights most notably, to the point of exhaustion. It all starts next week at La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine. I spoke with Mikhail last Friday. Welcome, Mikhail, to Upstage. Thank you for being here. How are you doing today?
Super good. I'm happy to be here with you.
Warm up. There's a bicycle on stage. Could we start there? I'm really curious about what we see when we walk into the theater space.
So the first thing you see when you enter the space is a battery. You have this empty space, and the only thing you see is like it's nothing, only like this source of energy within this plastic thing. And you just see that it's a show based on the energy, the resources. So that's the first contact you have. And then I build the set by myself. I bring the elements one by one, and I create like the electric, I don't know how to say that, but this electric buildings where you create electricity. And then I start producing with the bike.
So there's an ecological bent to this, of course. You're concerned about, I guess, the planet, the world that we live in. Has this been a concern or something that you've been developing on for a long time, or is it a more recent development for you?
It's a pretty long process. It started with, like almost everybody that has my age right now, like we want to connect more with nature. But more than that, I was really aware of the news concerning the big projects, oil projects in Quebec. Back in the days, there was Énergie Est from TransCanada pipeline, big thing company, and they wanted to pass a pipeline under the St. Lawrence River. And it really like struck my attention at that time. And I was, oh my God, they cannot do that, because I was always like reading about spills and disasters with like the oil industry, and I was becoming more aware about that fact. And I started reading some news and getting interested in like the crisis in general, reading a lot. I saw a lot of movies, and I understand like the thing that was really happening, which is like the complete shutdown of biodiversity and this massive changes in the climate. And I, at some point, I was really like, okay, I have to respond. Like I have to, it's my job as an artist to find a response and find some meaning in that.
So when you're developing a piece like this, that is touching on the environment, and obviously, as you were saying, people in your generation are very concerned about what's going on, but you know, not everyone who walks into the theater space might be as interested or realize how high the stakes are. So do you ever think about how to get people on board without sounding, I want to use I don't want to use the word preachy, but like, how do you, you know, connect with people who may not have this as the top priority to tell them that it's important?
Well, my first goal was to connect like in, like within like the body, like embody really the environmental crisis myself, and be able to connect people like the scientific part and the public, like how to get this crisis like real for us, inside us. And as I was working on my project, I was like, okay, I'm gonna produce my own energy, I'm gonna like spend my energy and work hard to produce my energy. And as we work on the piece, I became kind of a metaphor of, you know, the productivity, and I get really, really like kind of in distress trying to produce, and I get very tired, and it becomes really difficult. So I think people can relate to that, to being burned out, like being exhausted, being just, you know, like saturated with all this information. And it's getting real for a lot of people that this crisis, in a way, but also the crisis of capitalism that is really like burning out everybody inside us. So it gets real when I think you see it, like when you can relate to me as a performer, really trying to produce, to perform, to be at the top of her game, and to produce energy, to being an artist on stage also, to be like, to be able to make a show, like to make the challenge. You know, I can do it. I can produce my energy.
So just how putting your body through cycling and moving throughout the show, but putting it to an extreme length, not just a regular performance like we might see. What do you anticipate happening in your body and in your mind as you're going through that? Like, how tired are you going to be by the end of this?
Well, at some point I become frustrated. Like it's exhausting me, and I realize it, and I become conscious about it, and I want to break free. I want to revolt. I want to break down this system that I created that exploiting me. Can I say that? So I don't want to reveal everything, but I have to make a change, to make a shift in my perspective. And it becomes also like a manifesto of what I want to do, what I want to see in the society and inside us. It's like collective and individual change I want to see, and I embody it, and I kind of change my setup in a way to make new things, create new space, create new times, create new things by remodeling the space.
I'm speaking with Mikhail Bielinski, who presents Warm Up, world premiere coming to La Chapelle Sainte Contemporaine. So it's not just about, you know, the environment and our consumer society, but you're also, it's a treatise on meditation and rest and learning not to burn the candle at both ends. And I think that's a hard thing for people to do. When did you realize you were starting to kind of cross over, not just into commenting on the world around us, but also the inner struggle we have to be the best and to keep going, instead of, you know, just like chilling out more?
Well, I realized it physically, like while I was rehearsing, and I have people that work with me that we were talking a lot, like, you know, this show is about you. It's about you as an artist being exhausted, and what's your role in that? And so I was really like, I was embodying all my quest at every level. And it's funny you say meditative, because my work is usually really meditative. I work with sounds, voice, music, on a liturgical spectrum. So there is music in the show as well, but it was not my first goal to put that kind of how can I say, texture in the show. I want it to be really manifestive, but finally at the end it's here and it's really present, so I'm struggling like to keep on singing even though I don't have I don't have power, so I have to recycle again. And at some point after the shift, I really embody the meditative state, and it's a way of healing in a way. It's like, I think we really need healing, like Mother Earth need healing, but also us. And to be able to connect the land, nature to us, it's like a really, it's like the first thing we need to do. Connecting to nature is not only connecting with like forest when we go on the countryside, and it's just not, you know, the landscape. It's also understanding that every objects around you are made from resources, natural resources. So how do you consider objects after that? How do you consider, I don't know if I can say that, but materials like construction, like everything that is surrounding us are made from nature. So how do you consider degrowth from that moment in a vision of respect of nature and like stopping the destruction of it right now?
You were just mentioning about the liturgical component to some of your earlier works. So I think people have this expectation, your friends, your family, your fans, that it'll, you know, a Mikel concert is transcendental and it's meditative, but here they're going to be walking in and seeing you pedaling and sweating and making a big bold statement. So I guess the question is just, you know, what, how do you think the people who are used to your performing are going to be shocked to see this kind of transformation of you on stage?
So there are parts of music, there are parts of singing, and they are interrupted. So you access to that part of me that is on the other, on the previous work. But you're kind of shocked because you realize that I cannot do the work entirely because of the bike and the energy that I'm using. I spend a lot of energy and I produce a little bit of energy, really a little. So you see that contradiction, and that's the goal of the show, like to show that, to reveal what it involves to create a show, to create music and to present it. It's electricity, it's like it's nothing for us, but we think it's granted, and I just want to change the perspective on that. And yes, I use silence. So there's a meditation present, like from the beginning, it's meditative, and really like it creates activity in the mind. So you think, what's going on? What is she like pedaling like that? Why is she suffering like that? Oh, okay, to give us just little moments of singing, and then she goes pedaling again. So it has a meaning, you know, it has a meaning to do that, and it speaks for itself. I don't need to talk about that. I don't need to be like revendicative or to be like to manifest. I just need to do the things to make the performance, and people would understand a lot of it.
Where did you get the components for your bicycle contraption battery, those physical components?
Well, it's quite simple to do that. You just have to buy a, I don't know how it's in English, but it's a dynamo in French. It's the thing that turns. So you put this on a bicycle rack and it turns. And I worked with a great guy that is working, kind of inventing little things for the theater. So he created a box for me, an electric box, which is just converting this energy into like electricity I can use.
And that's what's going to be powering the lights and like the music, like everything that's on stage?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I have the natural resources of my show.
Would you recommend doing this to any other artist who might want to make a similar statement or, you know, explore this as an artistic concept? Would you recommend it?
It's pretty hard because, artists can work it as they want. Like, I'm alone, so if you have many bikes, I think it's easier. If you want, like, the public to bike for you, it's cool. But for me, it was really like a process of degrowth. I had to reduce my needs. I had to be efficient. It was really important for me. And it says something about the process, like to be forced to make new choices. And I also, it become like a way of talking about green growth, you know, the illusion of green growth, like, is it working or not? It looks like a great idea, but it's not. So if I recommend it, sure. Sure, if you want to try it. But it's quite a challenge.
You're quite a prolific artist. You've had a collection of poetry come out. You're working on an album as well, in addition to your acting. But I'm curious to know if you see commentary on the environment and consumption. Is that a theme that we're going to see for you in the future as you continue to make art?
I will continue to make art, but I think my art will become more spiritual, more liturgical, and my activist side will pop up in reality.
Where does the spirituality come from, this approach, this bringing in the liturgical and the spiritual?
Because I'm a singer, I was really interested in in singing old songs from many cultures, but folk singing also fascinates me. And I have also I studied in theater, so I worked on action, and I was really interested in action plus singing. What does it make? And in the liturgical singing, I found meaning, a lot of meaning for, and like the act of singing became for me like acting. So I found in prayers, in psalms, in mantras, a way of disconnecting of myself and connect with something bigger and a meaning that is transcendental. So, for myself, like it heals me to sing, and I think I can say that I would like to help healing others also.
Mikhail, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you and to learn more about your arts. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the invitation.
That was Mikhail Bielinski, star and creator of Warm Up. It opens Monday, December 13th, and runs until the 17th at La Chapelle Seine Contemporaine, 3700 Saint-Dominique. For tickets and more information, visit lachapelle.org, call 514-843-7738, or email vietri@lachapelle.org. Mikhail is also working on a music album for next year, and earlier this year, she released her first poetry collection titled Myth, preceded by Gloria. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca. Tonight you heard Sophie El-Assad, director of Antioch, streaming starting this Monday from Talisman Theatre, Norman Navrotsky, star and creator of Run Navrotsky Run, Escape from Banff Prison, also coming to your computer starting Saturday on YouTube, and singer-performer Mikhail Bielinski on her solo show Warm Up at La Chapelle starting this Monday. A big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under the archives. If you're looking for things to do this weekend, Super Dogs continues at the Siegel Center, The Love Trial is at the Masonic Temple, and Jonathan, A Siegel Parable, it's the final weekend at Hall Fred Barry at Théâtre Denise Peltier. It's a Geordie Surreal So Real Theater production. Thank you to Jack Solar, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Have fun and stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters.
ninth edition of Gray Matters. Tonight on the show, we have a lecture entitled Radical Lessons, Then and Now. It was recorded in Chicago, Illinois on October 5th of 2021. The speakers tonight are Angela Davis and Ruth Wilson Gilmore. Angela Davis is one of the iconic figures of this era. She was acquitted on conspiracy charges in 1970 after one of the most famous trials in U.S. history. She went on to become an internationally renowned writer, scholar, and lecturer. She is Professor Emerita at the University of California at Santa Cruz, an eloquent and charismatic speaker. She is much in demand all over the world and draws huge audiences. She is the author of many books, including Women, Race, and Class, Blues, Legacies, and Black Feminism, Abolition, Democracy, and Freedom is a Constant Struggle. She is accompanied by Ruth Wilson Gilmore, who is director of the Center for Place, Culture, and Politics, and a professor of geography at the City University of New York. She is the author of Golden Gulag, Prisons, Surplus, Crisis, and Opposition in Globalizing California. The American Sociological Association honored her with its Angela Davis Award. She is also recipient of the Lannan Cultural Freedom Prize. So here's tonight's lecture, Radical Lessons Then and Now, with Angela Davis and Ruth Wilson Gilmore.
These are important lessons that can be learned only if we cultivate ties with people who are involved in similar struggles all over the globe. And I really want to emphasize that, because I think this